Got Detective Eric Edson in studio with us from the Sheboygan Police Department. Eric, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay.
We're both ready for Friday. We pretty much got that established here.
Right.
Been a long week.
It has.
But anyway, if you're a regular listener, you know, Eric joins us usually a couple of times a month, keeps us on top of fraud and scams and things of that nature. And this morning, you want to go through some cybersecurity terms that people may be here, but maybe don't quite know what they mean.
Right.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing really on the horizon, like any new scams or anything that I want to bring to people's attention. However, we talk about a lot of different strategies to prevent yourself from being the victim of a scam.
Yep.
And there are some people that might not be familiar with some of those terms. So I just thought I would go through maybe half a dozen or so terms that you and I talk about a lot that we put in some of our publications, and just so people kind of have a better understanding of what those terms mean. So the first one is social engineering. That's really kind of the umbrella that we talk about. A lot of the scams occur because of social engineering. It's very rare that your personal computer or something might get hacked by a cyber criminal where they actually extract the data that way. Usually the human being in the middle, that's the weakest link, and they prey upon people to get information. And that's what social engineering is. It's a tactic of manipulating a person, typically to either breach some form of security, to get them to send money, or to divulge personal information. So many of the stories that you and I talk about where people, I think just before the news, you were talking about the person that was finally arrested. It's a rare case.
Yeah.
But the people that were, you know, conned into sending all that money, I'm sure there was some kind of story behind it that they pulled on the heartstrings of the people that want to help them. There was maybe a romantic relationship that was perceived by the victim, some source of sense of urgency to send the money. You know, he was in jail or needed it to get out of jail.
Yep.
So that's what social engineering is. It's an art of manipulating people to get them to do something, typically send the money or divulge the information.
And the story we talked about, I mean, because there was a guy who was scamming people on online dating sites, and would do just that. And after a while, once he established that relationship and built up trust, then that's when he started requesting money. And this one lady who I mentioned in the story sent like $200,000
right
to this guy. I mean, that just blows my mind.
Yeah, but we've talked about so many times how people, you know, some people are lonely, some people just are naive, and they want to believe so bad that whatever the story they're being told is the truth. You know, people are generally trusting and want to help other people out, so that's how that stuff happens so frequently, you know.
It's unfortunate, but you're right, it happens.
It is. Phishing is the next one. It's not like going out on Lake Michigan and fishing for salmon. It's P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. It's a form of social engineering tactic in which the criminals try to collect information from victims. It's really successful because a lot of times the messages that are sent in a phishing attack seem to come from a trusted or a known source. So think about the grandparent scam, or at work, you might get an email from your boss or HR person or finance person saying, hey, I need you to do XYZ for some, you know, get these credit cards or prepaid cards. There's a lot of different kinds of phishing. Most of them come through email. That's a typical one. They can come via text message. That's referred to as smishing.
Okay.
The SMS text message,
right.
They throw the S in front of there. Vishing with a V is phone calls. And then also through social media. So think about the messages you get via social media, or some of the surveys. We've talked about that, where a lot of those surveys that you might see on Facebook are designed to elicit answers that might be your security questions for your bank or things like that, just to kind of round out that portfolio or dossier that they have of you. So like I said, they're often very successful because they seem legitimate. You might see something from Amazon or from your credit card or a bank saying there's a problem with your account. And that's how the criminals are able to get that information from you.
Right.
So
there's usually a link, right, that they want you to click on where you can fix all this. But
Really, and you have to act immediately. Yeah, click this link immediately to secure this. Otherwise, there's going to be a problem. So when we talk about phishing attacks, that's what we're talking about. Those messages that are sent out or phone calls that try to convince people, like you said, to take some action, to click a link or do something like that.
Right. Phishing for information is probably a good way to remember that, even though it's, you know, with a PH instead of an F.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what they're doing, phishing for information, right?
Right.
Malware, that's short for malicious software. There's a lot of different kinds of malware. People often kind of use the term virus or worm or those kind of things interchangeably. Viruses, worms, Trojan horses, ransomware, that's all forms of malware. But malware is simply just a general term for computer code that's generated, designed to cause harm, to steal information, things like that. So a virus is something that's designed to really kind of destroy or damage the programs on your computer. A Trojan horse is kind of like a file hidden inside of a host file that you might download, or you might access a folder, and inside of there is a file that has malware in it. Worms are used to transport or distribute malware.
Okay.
And then ransomware, we've talked about before, that typically affects businesses. That's designed to either hold your data hostage or to delete your data unless you pay money. So there's also different kinds of spyware, and spyware can be kind of legitimate, I would say, or malicious. So legitimate spyware might be on your computer, ad trackers. So most people are familiar with what cookies are on your computer. Whenever you go to websites, it's really kind of scary, actually, how much information they track from you using apps, going to websites. Those are typically used for legitimate business purposes. So, mm-hmm. You know, not to defraud you, but that's spyware. But then there's other kinds of spyware that might be a key logger, that might be logging all the keystrokes to try to get your password, look at all the files on your computer. Those are the malicious ones that you might inadvertently download when you click on a link or something
sure.
like that.
So be careful.
Be careful.
Be careful clicking on those links. We talk about it all the time.
Right, right.
But anyway, spoofing is next on the list here,
yes.
Eric.
Spoofing is another issue that happens kind of as part of a phishing attack sometimes. It's the act of falsifying the identity of somebody. So either changing an email address to make it look like it's coming from a trusted source, changing the caller ID. There's a lot of scams reported to law enforcement that it looks like law enforcement is calling somebody to say you have a warrant or something like that. And then there's text messages as well. Just know that you can spoof almost anything. You can spoof an email address, a phone number, an IP address. So think like an IP address, your computer, your home network has an IP address, just like your house would have an address. That's how computers communicate with one another, and those can be spoofed as well. So you almost today can't trust anything that just shows up on a display, on your phone, on your caller ID, whatever it is. You always have to verify before you follow up on something, because things can be easily displayed as something that they're not.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but we really do have to be suspicious of all that stuff.
The technology has advanced so much, right? And this is a topic for another day, but deep fake videos. I mean, videos of what appear to be a person speaking. If you don't know what a deep fake is, maybe we can talk about that on another day. But there's videos out there of celebrities, politicians, and it looks like it's them talking, and it's actually computer-generated images of people talking, and they're able to convince people that it's an alternate reality. It's not really what you see. So
sure. It's
interesting technology. But firewall, or actually, I'm sorry, virtual private network. We talk about a VPN a lot. That's a really good strategy for people to use, especially if you use public Wi-Fi a lot.
Yeah.
If you use public Wi-Fi without a VPN, you're subjecting yourself to your data being stolen. And it doesn't take a lot of expertise for a criminal to do that. A VPN is a secure encrypted connection, almost like a tunnel that your data goes through, so that outside eyes, spying eyes, can't see the data that's being transmitted between your device and the network that you're connecting to. So oftentimes with a public Wi-Fi that's not password protected, criminals are able to hack in there and see all the traffic that's being sent along that network. With a VPN, you're kind of in a tunnel, and it's encrypted. The same goes for your service provider, though. So whoever you get your internet from, whatever websites you go to, they're able to track that and see that as well. So if you want to try to keep your internet traffic private from your internet service provider, a VPN is a good way to do that as well.
Okay.
Now firewall, that's a secure device that kind of protects your network from the outside. It can be hardware such as a router, or it can be software like a computer program. And basically the firewall sets up rules as to what traffic can access your device. So that can come as default rules with a program, or you can set up specific rules that will kind of hide your network, again, from snooping eyes. There's bots and all kinds of technology out there where they're constantly looking for weaknesses in networks to try to get in, especially in a corporate or enterprise kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And a firewall will typically protect your network from any outside threats that might be trying to get in.
All right. And one more on the list here.
Finally, yeah, two-factor authentication. This is, again, one of the best strategies you can use to help secure your accounts. For years, people relied on just a username and a password to access those accounts, and there's been so many data breaches that our passwords are out there. And typically, people don't practice really good password hygiene. They use the same password across multiple accounts. They use simple or easy-to-guess passwords. One of the best ways to help protect yourself is not foolproof, but is to use multi-factor authentication. And what that is, it's a strategy that in addition to your password, you either have a code texted to you or emailed to you. You might use biometrics such as your fingerprint or a face scan, like on an iPhone or something. You might be able to use your face scan. Or you might have like a key card or that kind of a code to plug into something to be able to access like a token or something like that to be able to access your data. So oftentimes multi-factor authentication is looked at as three different things, either something that you know, such as a password or a PIN, something that you have like a smart card or a token, or something that you are like, again, your fingerprint or some kind of biometrics.
Sure.
So it's another strategy that if your account, most accounts do, especially bank accounts, financial accounts, if it allows you to set up two-factor or multi-factor authentication to help protect your account, that's a really good strategy to help prevent if there's a data breach. If someone does get your password, they typically can't access your account.
All right. Very good. Good information this morning, Eric. Hopefully folks are taking notes at home.
There's a lot of information. Just one thing, too, just that came into mind as I was driving over here. It's election time, and I'm starting to get text messages on my phone from people running for office or to do this, and some of them contain links. And like we talked about mm-hmm. earlier, if you want to support a candidate or see what their positions are, don't click on those links and those unsolicited text messages. Go to their website or something like that. Criminals can embed malware and the things we talked about in those links, direct you to a malicious site. And even if they're not collecting your information, they might be, like I said, installing malicious software on your computer or on your phone. So people are starting to get those emails or text messages for the election. Don't click on any of those links. Just delete them and go to the website if you want more information about that candidate.
All right. Good advice. Eric, thanks for coming in.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it.